Welcome to Series 5 of My Life in Design, brought to you by the DBA and design-focused PR agency Red Setter. I'm Claire Blythe, co-founder of Red Setter. In this series, I'll be speaking to more people who are shaping the world of design, finding out how they discovered that design was a thing you could base a career around, and how they got to where they are today.
So this week, I'm here with Hamish Campbell, VP Executive Creative Director at Pearl Fisher in New York City. He's worked on brands such as Colgate, Pyrex, McDonald's, Seedlip, Gush's Candy, Patron, Cinnamon Toast Crunch, Bacardi, and Nike. The list goes on. Hamish, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, very nice to be here. Great way to start a week.
Definitely. Yeah, really, really good to meet up with you. Can we start right at the beginning? So what age did you realize that you might be able to build a career around design?
For me, I probably got to it quite late, actually, knowing this was an industry. I was probably 20, 21, I should think like that. I didn't really know it was there. I always had a love for art and drawing and a passion for being creative. And when I was a kid, I used to love Ninja Turtles, and I'd always make kind of their bases and put things together, kind of very Blue Peter style, is what I made earlier. So yeah. Always loved that idea of putting things together, and maybe didn't quite have the sort of money as a kid to buy these toys. I could always make them and have fun. So I always just loved it. It was always just play for me. So I studied art at school, but also studied maths and physics. My sort of brain seemed to kind of work that way, that numbers collect to as a subject. I kind of enjoyed it. It came easier to me than probably most people. And in those days, every career advice you'd have is like, go be an engineer. There's jobs there. We all kind of make sense. What are you going to do with art? You're just going to be a struggling artist painting in the garage, which I also like nice things. So I didn't want to do that. So actually, I first started going to Edinburgh to do engineering, which I kind of quickly realized there was not an interest of mine. It sort of didn't feel right. Wow. So I always find it amazing that when you're 15, 16, you're kind of making decisions on what the rest of your life is going to be, where I think I was more just wanting to like hang out with my friends and finish the kind of careers meetings and just do your exams. And I was looking forward to leaving school. But yeah, so I went off to Australia and took some time out to figure out what I was going to do with my life, and played a lot of rugby, played some rugby out there, and taught in a couple of schools to sort of earn a bit of money and do some travel in the sort of classic gap year kind of moment. Yeah. And it was only then I realized, oh, I probably need to get a real job at some point and make some money. And art was what I always loved, but didn't know what to do with it. And it wasn't until I was dating a girl out in Australia, and I kind of thought I'd be there forever. I love the place. And went to talk to some people at Sydney University, and you know, what can I do with this? And they pushed for a while, saying, what about engineering? You've got that sort of architecture, which kind of inspired me. It was kind of like, oh, creative, it's got this sort of engineering side, that kind of makes sense. But it, you know, probably says about me, they kind of said, oh, it's a 7-year course. And at that point I was like, oh, you got anything a little bit quicker than 7 years?
it's a long time.
Yeah. And they were then the ones said, well, there's actually, you know, what about graphic design? And they sort of said, no. I was like, well, that seems really kind of cool. I kind of remember drawing my own kind of posters and book covers, and that seems really interesting. And they were the ones who advised me that, you know, well, you come from the UK and London has some of the best design schools to kind of learn from. So not to sell themselves short, they have a great system out in Australia, but they said you could move back to the UK for a bit, to get your degree there. And if you want to come back to Australia, you'll easily get a job. But moved back to the UK and broke up with my girlfriend and never had a reason to go back. So yeah, I moved back to the UK and went to then Brighton to do a foundation course, learn some skills. And I think foundation courses are amazing because I knew a bit about what graphics was, but you get to experiment it, but you also get to experiment with photography, did a bit more fine art, you know, do I really love this, where I wanted to go, you know, experiment for a year, which was amazing. And you know, graphic design really kind of clicked. I loved sort of typography, what you could do with letters, what you could play, which my parents always find it weird because I'm terribly dyslexic with all my kind of thing, but I've always loved the shape language of letters and what they can communicate and how they do. And seeing pictures and put stuff together. So I love that. And after Brighton, kind of then went to, when I was there, it used to be called London College of Printing, but I think it's the University of Arts now, London, now with, you know, along with St. Martin's and Chelsea and Camberwell, and really kind of learnt my craft there. And it was amazing because it really dug into, you know, one, it specialized in typography, which I had a passion for, but also the really traditional analog screen printing, letterpress, and, you know, really got a love for getting my hands on and, you know, finding solutions and experimenting with the course and what we can do. And that's where my sort of passion came from before I kind of got my first job. And we had some great professors who taught me a lot and spread across the different disciplines, but also just gave me a lot of freedom and went to do what I wanted to do for 3 years and create kind of crazy kind of things. So yeah, that's where it sort of stemmed from. And my sort of love for art kind of just grew into this amazing world I didn't even know existed.
That's the common story, isn't it? That you don't know, one tells you that whole industry exists. And
yeah.
The design side, the strategy side, the account management side, there's so much to actually do. But yeah, you have to really hunt to try and find it.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's you know, I think everyone kind of assumes it's just like advertising. You know, that's been a much sort of industry going for longer. It's where it kind of, in the design world, actually sort of was born out of it. And you go like, well, am I really part of the Mad Men set? Am I going to be sort of on Madison Avenue sort of doing these campaigns? Then you didn't actually realize that there was people behind there, and you know, the guys who were hand drawing or hand rendering the actual ads, what created our whole industry.
Yeah.
So it's sort of amazing. And we are a very young industry, and we probably need to do better that, you know, you can go anywhere and everything's been designed by someone. It doesn't just appear on its own. And I think we're quite a modest industry. We don't sort of say the impact of what we do, and we stop designing. Everything kind of stops. It needs to be tall and bland. So it's, you know, we should be a bit more louder, I think.
I think it's true. I always think that an inherent problem with design and graphic design is when it's done really, really well, it can often just be designed to not really be noticed. It just feels right. So it blends into a bit. Not always, obviously, if you're trying to draw attention to something, but if it blends into the background, that can be inherent nature.
But I think the real skill in it is you shouldn't really see the designer, because it's all about the brand and you know, the positioning and the, you know, the target audience you're after. Where there's a difference where an artist might be telling a story of how they're feeling and there's a change, where we're actually sort of communicating something else about whatever the product might be or positioning might be. So the sort of great design, as you said, it seems seamless. It sort of fits into it. And these brands, you know, then take that journey to become organic and individuals start having a relationship with the brand versus the designer behind it.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're completely right. That whole feeling that it doesn't just appear. I think when I was younger, I definitely thought it did just appear. It would never enter my head that, I don't know, a box of Lego or the whole menu at McDonald's or anything like that had actually been designed by someone. I just thought that's just the way it was.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it is. So, yeah, these things just appear, but it's like, oh, actually, multiple people probably touched this before it, you know, came to the consumers, and lots of conversations and thought has gone into every element, even if it's like a small little IKEA instruction booklet, all the way to a massive campaign. There's a great quote that design is intelligence made visual. And I think that's very kind of true. All these kind of problem solving is kind of thought about and brought to the world for these answers.
Yeah, that is exactly it, isn't it? That's a really good quote. That's the thing, it passes through lots of people to get the fantastic design, but it's so important.
Which just definitely
break things. But so tell me about, so after you left University of Arts, what did you want to do?
So when I kind of left there, I wasn't quite sure what I was going to do. And like everyone else, like applied for jobs and so forth. And it's a competitive industry. You know, every year, a whole bunch of new hungry designers come out. But I kind of love kind of creating and making stuff. And I sort of had, you know, a couple of friends who were starting to cut their teeth in the music industry and doing music videos. And they always kind of like kind of some more affordable kind of people to help them out. So they kind of brought me in. I was happy to take any kind of money at that stage and sort of use my skills. And started working on a couple of some music videos where I was doing like animations. So old school stop frame animations where I was kind of illustrating on individual frames. At the time, I thought it was incredible. I was sort of going, well, I was doing kind of 18 hours a day, kind of, you know, drawing each frame by frame and putting in, but it was kind of fun. And
anything kind of
It did. So, I mean, it's going back a bit, but for the Cribs, Mirror Kisses.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Kind of crazy illustrated album, you know, worked with some art directors there. Very kind of surreal moments where I watched back and I was like, wow, yeah, we did go out and party the night before. Now the video is a bit strange, but it's kind of very fun sort of seeing what comes together. And, you know, it was a very, you know, almost cutting out and sticking down. And, you know, I remember getting inspired by just things from my own portfolio, sticking in there, as well as some random idea came together. And I just kind of love the idea. You can just find anyone and collaborate with them. And getting to work with artists was incredible. I was like, wow, this is the Cribs. And I've just like stepped out of school and, you know, doing this video. And, you know, I was lucky. I had kind of friends who come from Bournemouth and they're very much in the sort of film industry. And they got that and started doing there. And there was a collective they were called Colonel Blimp. And it was just, you know, a collection of independent, you know, art directors making these music videos. And luckily, you know, they brought me to do some. And then I kind of moved on, and it's almost in a sort of freelance model where, Empire Design, that was it, where they make sort of the movie posters in an incredible building just behind sort of John Lewis on Oxford Street. And, you know, I was just like in awe of walking into this big Georgian up the stairwell. And I was like, wow. And watching sort of movies before anyone else could do it so they could build the sort of posters. And I managed to sort of get to work on any wanted the Skeleton Key. I think it was a kind of series of movies afterwards, but got to sort of play and sort of do that. And you kind of see it on a billboard and you're like, this is incredible. I drew that. And that's now on a billboard and it's on like in the cinema when it sort of comes up, and it's amazing. Just like little old me just did this kind of little thing, and it's all around the world now, which is kind of mind blowing when you start thinking about how much impact you can kind of have. And there's always someone's individual hand behind it.
Yeah, definitely. That's really exciting. Especially that age and that sort of point in your career, must be, although it must never really get old, really, just seeing stuff you've designed around the place.
Oh, no. I mean, sort of friends and family kind of get very bored of me. I do a lot of kind of consumer goods, and particularly in the, you know, spirits and liquor space. They go to a bar and we'll sit there and I'll be like, oh, that's me, that's me, that's me. Then I'll be like, oh, someone's redone that one. I already did that. That was me. So, but it's always nice to watch sort of your stuff evolve and kind of change. And I have a kind of beloved bottle that I just did. I mean, it's over 20 years ago, but it's never changed, called Ramazzotti Amaro, which is one of the first kind of spirit bottles I did.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not a big brand. It's in the Amaro out of Italy. It's, you know, it's a very old brand and from Milan, and they're very passionate about it. And it's stayed the same. And I hope it never changes, because it's just when I first kind of loved doing spirit bottles. You know, there's plenty of stuff I've designed that's been redesigned over the years, but that one still stays strong. So I have a lot of heart for it. I'll be sad if it changes. So I hope it never does.
So you started out almost on a freelance kind of base, basically.
On a freelance base, you know, bouncing around, and then got into some like internships, little connections of a lot of the art directors in the music business, you know, back in the day when music videos were more of a thing on MTV and VHS1, and where they actually really made their money was actually doing commercials, you know, out there versus their love for the music. And I had some friends that were doing some stuff for Nike. So they kind of asked me to do a couple campaigns and draw some things for that, which I happily did. And at the same time, I started working for Michael Peters, Identica. Back in Notting Hill, and they had a big Nike account. So it kind of had a nice connection. And my creative director, Dana Robertson, at that time, you know, he was very kind of passionate. He was kind of from the partners, very energetic, bringing sort of new life into Identica that, you know, lucky enough to work with this sort of great site, Michael Peters, and learned a lot from him. But
did you get to work with Michael?
He was very much overseeing, but Dana was my creative director who led all of the things. But Michael used to come through, and if you've ever heard him, he'll call everybody darling and this amazing man. But, you know, to at such a young age to kind of sit with someone who built many businesses in the US and UK and, you know, for Pearlfish work for now, you know, the founder, Jonathan, he actually worked for Michael Peters and Partners, you know, sort of back in the sort of 80s out in New York. So there's kind of a nice sort of family connection all the way through that my sort of boss now, I guess, sort of worked for a previous boss of mine, which is amazing. So, you know, he's one of the greats, and it was amazing. He would sit down with you still and ask what you're doing and give you some advice. And, you know, very lucky to kind of had, you know, that's 40 years of experience at that point that come and sit next to me and help me, guide me, and encourage me to be as kind of playful and as creative and experimental, and keep that hunger you have at college or university. You know, don't suddenly kind of close up because now it's like professional work. Be there. It's the best time when you're in those early years, because you can make mistakes, you can mess it up then, because, you know, there's enough support around you and enough experience. And my juniors always encourage them to be like, you're the one I want to see the really crazy idea that I sort of like look at the board when I'm reviewing and be like, what the hell are you thinking? Like, where did that come from? That's amazing. Like, I would never think of that. You know, so, you know, he always kind of really pushed me to, you know, to my team to like, trust my gut. You get this actual physical feeling when you know it's right, and, you know, you can work on stuff and you're not excited about it. And it's always just put your pen down. Why are you bothering wasting your time on it? You know, let's move on and do a different idea. So I learned a lot from him and end up working on their Nike account for quite some time, which was a real start of my sneaker obsession. The people who know me, I have quite a lot of sneakers. So, and it was similar. I think I was always just in awe of these big brands, where getting to go out to Amsterdam for their European headquarters and walk into Nike and just see how amazing it was and meet some of the sneaker designers and the technology behind it and the care and passion and really kind of understand what a brand is and brand behavior. It's not just this logo they stick on it. You know,
yeah.
Actually, like the whole universe it was and the culture it built behind it. And I was like, wow, this is so powerful. You know, people kind of fall in love with this and they, you know, yeah, live by it. And you know, you can say you kind of end up drinking the Kool-Aid a little bit too much, but it's amazing to see the passion that people buy and collect, and myself like do. And I you know, buy sneakers I won't wear, I'll just collect them because they're beautiful objects. And the, you know, the designer behind that, I remember Air Maxes were my favorite, and seeing some of Tinker Hatfield's like original sketches of where the ideas came from, mind-blowing and sort of beautiful. And I was amazed I got to do some of his anniversary campaigns, so that was always a lot of fun.
Definitely. Yeah. God, Nike must be such an amazing place to start and just see that brand world. That's how,
yeah,
boundaries on everything from Nike Town to seeing, yeah, those rooms to trainers must be amazing.
Well, definitely. I think, you know, I was kind of never really understood the idea of, or probably had the language of what an iconic brand is and what that behavior was. I was just like, I just like creating stuff and people seem to like what I'm doing. So cool. It's fun to me. It's a sort of passion. And lots of my kind of friends who work in very different industries, they're also like, oh, I've got this job, I'm going to go to work. And I was like, I love it. I just go and draw all day. It's amazing. And someone pays me to do it. Like, I found a loophole. What are you complaining about?
It's true though, isn't it? That's it. It's such a fun, amazing, I mean, it can be stressful and it can be lots of stuff that goes with it, but yeah, it's such a brilliant industry to work in.
Well, I think it is. And those sort of early days, I think it's slightly different now, but I remember like working all hours to get a pitch out there and excitement and, you know, didn't care that you probably go, oh, wow, if I figured out my hourly rate, I'm barely earning anything. But it was just fun to work in these brands and the culture of people and the energy. And, you know, everyone wears their heart on their sleeves and cares about it. And I think everyone's doing their passion versus doing a job. And you kind, yeah, of connect to that and build into that. And, you know, I remember being there at like 4 or 5 a.m. finishing stuff up and then back at work at 8, you know, a couple hours sleep at home and, wow, ready to go again. I mean, I definitely couldn't do that now, but, you know, early 20s, I had the energy to do it.
So how did you move from, was it Lewis Mobley you went to after?
Yeah, so after Michael Peters at Identica, then I, again, very lucky, went to Lewis Mobley with Mary. There's some great, yeah, designers with lots of experience above me. There was like Jeff Halpin and John Geary, amazing typographers and illustrators who've been around forever. And, you know, sadly, John Geary is no more. But Mary was looking for someone to come and bring a younger energy to her team. I mean, Lewis Mobley must be about 40 years old now, I imagine. And Mary is, yeah, an icon in the industry. And I sort of think back of when she started out to be a female lead in sort of very male-dominated industry was, yeah, you know, very inspiring. And Michael was inspirational as he would come and talk to you, but Mary was still hands-on. And it was incredible that she'd sit there and craft type with you and, yeah, you know, had such a high standard and, you know, made me have to like step up and raise my game. And she had all the technical ability, and I'd walk into a room with a design and Mary would know nothing about the brief and instantly have like an idea to improve it. And I was blown away of how sharp her mind was, how creative she was. And, you know, wow, you walk in there and you see all the DNA, the like awards all around, and you're like, wow, this is like mind blowing. And you know, she runs a very kind of a tight ship, what's going on there. And, you know, it's definitely a different culture, but it's the highest level. And, you know, getting, yeah, to, you know, go from Michael Peters to Mary Lewis. So, you know, I owe them both a lot of my own education and skill of how I kind of think. And that I still use some of how they taught me to my team today.
What fantastic people to learn from.
Yeah, definitely. And then when I was at Lewis Mobley, then that's when I got the phone call from Jonathan and Karen at, from Pearl Fisher, and you, yeah, know, wanted to talk to me about sort of taking the lead of their studio. And, you know, sort of the funny story on that is I actually thought they were talking about the London studio. And at that time, I just brought a house up in West Finchley, so right at the top of the Northern Line, and the London studio being all the way down in Notting Hill. I was like, well, that's quite a commute. I'm not sure about this. I'm not going to move. I just bought this house. That's like an hour each way. And I met them, and I mean, I only knew them vaguely through the industry, and I'd always admired the work that Pearl Fisher had done. And also doing more and more packaging, like what were they doing? They did some fantastic work. So I wanted to meet them and get to know them. And then when they kind of, I was kind of like, this is great, but I'm not sure London studio is great. But they were like, no, we're talking about New York. And I was like, wow, New York. And then, yeah, they kind of up, but they're like, you won't cross London, but you'll cross the Atlantic. So I was like, yeah, oh yeah. So New York was calling, and I'd only ever been to New York once in my life, 4 or 5 years before I took the job. And it was I ran the New York Marathon with some friends of mine, and we only sort of did all the classic tourist stuff. So I knew nothing really of New York at all. So it was a whole new adventure. And I think I'd always had, I mean, once I'd lived in Australia for a while, I wanted to move at some point to another country and emigrate. I love travel. I love experiencing different worlds. And while I was at Lismobi, I kind of flirted with an opportunity in San Francisco working for Pepsi, but I kind of thought it was more the idea of moving to another country versus the job. So I said no to that. And then Jono and Karen came with the New York, and I was like, well, someone's telling me to move to America, so let's go for it. And
they set up in New York at that point?
They had set up. It was very small when I started. We must have been about 10 or 12 people, you know, and heavily dependent on the London studio to support us and use their portfolio as we were building the team. And it was kind of a terrifying challenge to sort of come out and take the lead of a studio in a different country, you know, it's purely as a different culture. I mean, Jono gave me some great advice of like, think about it like you're moving to China just because they speak the same language and you kind of know all from the movies and the TV series and things like that. Like it is so different. And,
yeah.
You know, he kind of always tells you this, and it's like, you know, you've got to think about a car. If it's an automobile here, and you know, we have a bonnet, but they have a hood, you know, we have a boot, they have a trunk. So it's all the same things, but everything's different at the same time.
Yeah.
And I probably had a bit of a European kind of ego of like, surely the best works there. You know, American designers are as good. And, you know, I was pleasantly surprised. I'd probably say the other way now, I think some of the talent in the US is mind blowing. And particularly the younger generations are coming through, like, they terrify me, and I'm glad I'm not up against them at the same age as them, because you know, they're much further along the curve than I was at their sort of level of experience.
Yeah, I can imagine. Actually, it's got people have got more chance to ways of expressing yourselves, maybe with all the different sort of digital.
There's all the digital. I think I was very much, I had to look through magazines and books, and I'd tell them that I was learning before the kind of internet, and I'd go like, ask them, do you know what a zip disk is? Do you know what that was? Do you know what Quark is? And they just like look at me like I'm crazy. I mean, they obviously all design with this on their iPads or their tablets. And I still design with a mouse. And they're like, I'm such an old granddad to them. Like doing it. Like, I draw everything with a mouse. And they're like, how do you do that? So it's kind of nice to sort of show them some old ways. But yeah, it's, you know, the ability of where they can get inspiration from is incredible. And, you know, what they can do to inspire them. But I think also the schools here are fantastic. You know, there's always, you know, great schools in the UK too, but I think they really focus on technical ability here as well, where I think in the UK it's purely just about ideas. Well, what my experience with ideas, which is fantastic, but sometimes, you know, being able to do like the actual hand skills as well just gets you to another level, and you can bring your own vision to life better, which I think they get excited. And, you know, they're all so proactive, and they've all got a side gig going on, and, you know, they never stop, which is amazing.
See, if say, for example, Parsons, which is one of the big design schools in New York, the kids that leave Parsons generally feel a little bit more ready to get a job in the industry than more on their sort of London side.
Yeah, they definitely. I think London, it's more the pure thought. And, you know, it's always like, we're always taught like smile in the mind. It's the big idea, that one simple thing, which is great. And you need that. And you definitely have to have a powerful idea, an original idea. But I think what we, you know, it might have changed because it's a long time since I was there, that I think the schools here prepare you for the industry a bit more. You know, what you got to do, what your portfolio should look like. I mean, my portfolio was a real mess. I can't believe anyone gave me a job, to be honest. They sort of came out. But they have a good range. They'll be like making sure you're ticking off the different categories and industries and what you're doing and skill set and all the software, and your hand skills are great. So the technical abilities are, you know, I feel I'm a pretty good illustrator, but nowhere compared to some of my team. It's mind blowing what they can do and put together. And there's been a big movement in interest in typography, and they all draw beautifully. And it's, and playing with type. And I think when I grew up, we were very used to like, we'll come up with an idea and then we'll hire an illustrator or hire a typographer. And I think here we like to do it more in-house, and it kind of fit my own style, because I always liked doing that. Although there's things I can't do, and there are great, you know, parts industry are these beautiful illustrators, typographers, and these experts. And I still make sure all my logos are finished by someone who just spends all day doing it, because, you know, I don't have 40 hours looking at one logo. Yeah. And someone who does gets it perfect, and there's no issue of using specialists. I encourage it to make sure these things are perfect every time.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell me about your role today. So you've been at Pearl Fisher for 11 years. So what does exec creative director, what's your role within it today, and what's your day look like?
Well, I mean, my days never stop. I mean, I've always been a big believer that, you know, I'll always keep my pen to paper. You know, there's definitely, as you get more senior industry, I mean, your day gets busier. You know, I run the whole New York studio and the whole US arm of Pearl Fisher. So there's a lot of kind of just the business side. And I think there's learning that, you know, although you start out enjoying the play of the industry and that creativity, but as you get more senior, more experience, it's a business and you've got to balance that. And we always talk about business performance and creative excellence at equal measure. You know, one doesn't weigh out the other. And that's how you get the best work, because, you know, also what we give away is IP, it's originality every day. It's worth a lot. Yeah. And I think we're one of the most wasteful industries of, like, we throw away original ideas every day. Like, do not know another industry that does that, that we come in, we come up with an original idea and move on, and 99% of it will never see the light of day. You know, I sit here and I have my creative director below me, and I have two associates under him who kind of drive the design team day to day, and I work closely with them and everyone. But, you know, I'll still take a project and say, I'm having this one. I want to keep my pen. I want to keep sharp. I can't ask my junior designers to do something I won't do. And, I, you know, I'm a believer in leading by example. And I got into this industry because I love drawing, not because, you know, I can do an Excel sheet or something like that. It's just a balance of, like, running the business and keeping the culture right and inspiring the team. And I think, As a role, because I lead it, it's not just designers. I've got to think about, how do I keep my client management team inspired? How do I keep the strategists inspired and engaged? How do they, you know, the team heads, how do they lead it in their shape? You know, I want them to have their own individual thought. I don't want it to be just a replica of me. Like, there's no point hiring someone that's going to do what you want to do. I want them to do something different. They'll probably do it better than I can do it. And building that, make sure all those different roles and different cogs in the system are all coming together and working seamlessly. And, you know, I think I sort of come in now, and, you know, it's crazy thinking, I feel I'm still quite young in the industry, but I'm probably the old one that's coming in with, like, have you thought about doing this? You know, now playing the Michael Peters role, coming with a bit of advice and sitting down next to them and having that moment. And I love and engaging. And, you know, whenever I get a chance to, like, get out from my desk or out of a meeting room and or talking to clients and sort of saying, hey, we do this.
Yeah, definitely. That's certainly moved on. Mm-hmm. How, you know, on the business side of things, like, how did you develop those business skills? Is it on the job training?
I mean, there's definitely some training. I mean, one of the things, especially for the younger listeners you have who think about industry, networking is one of the biggest things. Getting to know people, understanding people. And, you know, that's one when you're looking to move around in your career, but also when you start talking to clients and you get connected into winning new business. And it's all what people you trust and who you want to work with. You know, there's many great agencies doing amazing work. And I've always remembered that, you know, my clients, their best bet, their job is working with an agency. You know, they have, like, a hard job, and, you know, they're answering up to a much higher level, you know, billion-dollar brands and shareholders, and the pressure's on them. They get to take that step out and be creative and look at this brand and work with you. So, you know, we want to be the fun ones, engaging, and it's a social business that we do and engage with them. And it seems to actually work for me. I've always loved chatting. I kind of break this sort of formal approach down pretty quickly and be like, hey, like, you know, I say to all my clients, like, just call me on my cell phone. You don't have to wait for a meeting or email me and, like, dear sir, please, can I have this? Like, give me a call, give me a text, we'll chat about it. This is an organic process, and we're going to make this brand. Like, I know it's a $1 billion brand, but we're going to do something incredible with this. And, you know, in reality, all these brand managers, market managers, it makes them look good because it's increasing sales. They get their bonuses, they move on in their careers, and we're working together to help each other out. And, you know, push these brands to their full potential, and then also everyone's individual careers as well.
No, that sounds really good. Can I ask you about how you inspire yourself as a designer? Do you have any particular things that you do to actively inspire yourself, or does it just come naturally?
I think definitely I've always been lucky enough that ideas will always come to my head, but I think what I do is it's a 24-hour job that I'm always looking. I always get excited to go around. My, you know, my phone is my most important tool. The amount of pictures I have and the amount of folders of things I collect from that, I think you can do it endlessly online, but I always push my team to, like, go out and see the real world. I think I got inspired. I saw a lecture from Bob Gill a few years back now, and it's more than a few years ago, but he was talking about, you're designing for a laundrette, the only place you need to be is in the laundrette. You need to know what it smells like, what it feels like, what it sounds like, that vibrations, that hum. Like, you don't know what a laundrette is if you're going on Google and typing in laundrette and seeing pictures. You got to see all that multi-sensorial bit. You got to see it's maybe a bit gritty and a bit grimy, and that starts bringing inspiration of what might you do with the typography or the color palette or anything that's around that. So, your Macs are just a tool. They're not your inspiration. They shouldn't be building an answer. So the answer is getting out there. So, I'll do things from, I'll go to galleries and get inspired, but, I'll be in a bar and I'll see a weird picture on the wall or something scribbled something. Oh, that's really cool. Like, who did that? Like, take a little picture and things start connecting and coming together. And I probably find most of my actual ideas come when I'm like running in the gym or taking a shower or walking home or, versus sort of in there. And I think it's always been open to, being a sponge. I think it's the most important things, sometimes bizarre color palettes you just see somewhere or it's in your subconscious or come through and it just connects. Or talk to them more senior designers, we all have our sort of back pocket stuff we saw that one day it might get the brief come through and you're like, oh, here it is. And it's amazing how often it is. And I'm like, oh, I remember something that I saw like 3-4 years ago on vacation wherever in this, and that was incredible, that like tile work on a old medieval castle or something, and now I'm like doing it on a bottle of vodka or something. So I think it's just been always a sponge in there, and don't be afraid to like have a like sketchbook if you want that, or your phone, or type it down. Or I forever like wake up in the middle of the night, have an idea, and I get my phone on my little notes app, and thousands of pages now with it inside my phone of all these crazy ramblings that sometime at some point will make sense to me and connect with a brief that comes together.
Yeah, no, I agree. That sounds good. Can I ask you about the design industry generally? Are there any parts that you find challenging? Do you feel part of it? Do you enjoy it?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, it's sort of nice when you get in kind of the more established part of your career. And I think, particularly in the US, there's a much more openness, I think, to sort of conferences and networking and be part of it and be collaborative and inspire each other. And I do a lot of talking on stages. I write a lot of articles and similarly do a lot of podcasts too, which is fun to kind of like share knowledge and connect. And, we are, each agency is very competitive. We want to be the best, but we're also very collaborative and we want to share and we're all good friends. And, I probably know most creative directors, particularly in the New York area as well and beyond. And, we'll text each other when things come out. Like, was that you? That's really great. That is, like, well done and congrats. Right. And often when pitches, if you win one or lose one, you're all kind of happy. I mean, for everybody who does it. So I think it's a very small industry and it's very tight knit. Everybody knows everybody and done things where, I'm hiring people and I've had to like ring the creative director because he's a friend of mine. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, dude, this person wants to go. I'm going to hire them and they're going to ring you in the morning and sort of hand their notice and that'd be too bad. And vice versa to myself too. Yeah. And, it's, people kind of will come to me and if they're moving on, they're always surprised I already knew about it beforehand because I've had a beer with their new boss the day before because they're wanting to know what they're really like. And, the reality of people move around and it's so such a handful, particularly at the very top. And, I'd like to think Pearl Fisher is one of the best agencies out there. And there's a handful like us and you'll be surprised that the people just rotate within that. Like when they're recruiting, they'll look at my team and vice versa. When I'm recruiting, I look at their team, who's doing great stuff in there and are they interested in a new opportunity? And so, that's where that networking is important. One, for your own self career, you want to meet people and know people and, sort of grow. As much as I'd love my team to stay with me forever, they got to take the opportunities. It's very rare to have someone who does one agency their whole life.
Kindly, can I ask you about, you've actually given quite a lot of tips already for juniors starting out, but are there any other sort of top tips for beyond design skills of how people can sort of set themselves apart?
Yeah, I think it's key to, not shy away from reaching out. Like I think there's probably in the American culture, like students will hit me up on LinkedIn or on Instagram and like, hey, can I just chat and advice? And I'm always very open to anyone. I might be like, hey, I saw your thing. I'm busy, but let's set a time to get a coffee next week or a chat or like show me your stuff. Like I love investing in kind of new young talent. Like I always feel, very senior people spend a lot of time in my young career. So I feel like I need to sort of pay that back and hope it goes on and on. So don't be ashamed just because I have a ridiculously long title that sounds very kind of like formal and scary, but it's not just like, I'm just Hamish. And if you want to get a beer and chat about work, that's what I love talking about. Just reach out to me. So I think being, interested in, I had one of my favorite designers who, worked for me, this very talented designer called Priyanka. She actually sort of came from India. moved over here, did a sort of master's course, and she went out and designed this sort of beautiful box. And I always embarrassed her because I still have it today. She worked for me, it started 12 years ago. She's now independent doing her stuff. It's amazing, talented. And it was for this cookie store called The Fat Witch, and just made a little box and a story about it and handcrafted it and sent it in. And it was brilliant. And I was just like, we've got to hire this girl. Went to this, and I think she sort of jokes because I'm good friends with the owner of Stranger Stranger. She probably went out to Stranger Stranger and me, and Kevin, the owner, is mad that I hired her and I got in there first. Went inside that, and, you know, it's gone on and done incredible stuff. So I think, you know, putting yourself out there, don't put it in. Everyone's very open with inside the industry. And I think, talk to them. And I think also think about what agency do you want to work for? Because that will set the tone of where you go and how far you go. It is immensely competitive. There's not that many agencies. And I think, you know, I understand the pressure of like, I've just left college. I've got my student debt. I've got to pay my rent. I've got to get a job, and happy to take any job. And I think one of the big things I tell students is there really isn't a world where you go, well, I'll just do this for 2 years, then go to an agency I like, because that's your portfolio. And if you're not doing the top quality work, if you're not doing something you really enjoy, it's very hard to switch, because you might have to start back. And then you're against the new younger people who've sort of come out. So, you know, it's the hard thing to make sure you pick and choose the right agency, right? What you want to do, that you believe in the work they're doing, inspired by the work, and, you know, fight to work there, fight for your job. Like, you know, you might mean you're doing an internship a little bit longer than you want, and you might be having to work a few more hours, but it'll work for you, and you'll get a reputation of someone who cares more about the work and the job, and you're showing your passion. That's what I want. I see hunger and drive, and I also want to hear from you. And, you know, I'm sort of rambling now, but I love when we do reviews, and I'll be in there and I'll tell the intern, it's like, tell me to shut up if you disagree with what I'm saying. I want to hear your viewpoint. You're a consumer, you're an adult. Like, you know, I can help guide you, but I'm more impressed, and I've had many come through, and they're normally the ones I hire who will disagree with me in a review. Like, don't be quiet. Be yourself. Put yourself out there and trust that, you know, you've got a degree in it. You're a highly crafted, talented person in the industry. You know, show your voice and do it in a way that isn't sort of egotistical. Be kind of humble about it, but, you know, be nice, but don't be a wallflower, because people will overlook you, and someone will come in and be just as good as you, and it will take that sort of spot.
Yeah. Completely agree. Yeah, don't be quiet, I think, is very, very good advice. But also, I think I've been talking about this a lot recently, what you said about getting in touch. I think when I was a student, when I was starting the industry, the idea of just getting in touch with someone that I really admired, I always think, oh, they wouldn't be interested, and they wouldn't actually pay any attention to me. And they do. A lot of people just do. You'll get ignored by me, but that happens. But, you know, people are busy. But you'll still get through to some.
Don't be afraid to bug them. Like, you know, all the people in business, we're busy people. We've got lots of meetings and stuff. But like, I'd sit there and enjoy it, and I'll be like, oh, I'll get back to that. I will get to it. And sometimes I might forget because I'm traveling or whatever. Like, send a follow up. Don't do a one and done just because they didn't reply. Didn't mean they didn't see it. Like, definitely. Like push yourself, you know, to sort of get there. And they did. I promise you, they did see it, and they probably did like it, you know, and follow up. And, you know, the worst thing they can say is, we don't have a space here, maybe next time, or they'll probably give you some advice to help you get better the next time. So the worst thing you'll do is walk away with a bit of advice. So there's no harm in reaching out to people.
Yeah, completely agree. Hamish, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. Absolute pleasure. And, you know, it's fantastic what you're doing, helping, you know, educate the next generation. And I hope I've helped a little bit in some way too.
Yeah, thank you.